How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, XM Radio 208, 794 on Sirius. A million different places to hear this show, including streaming live worldwide on the internet up at WrestlingObserver.com. We weren't here last week. We've got a tons of stuff to get into as well. This week, UFC 160, Extreme Rules, Raw, SmackDown, Impact. So much stuff to get into today. And after the first break, we're going to kick it off. Last night, as noted, was UFC 160. It was a fun show. We had a bunch of knockouts there on the main card, submissions, first round finishes, all leading to a bunch of big matches taking place later this summer and fall, including a new heavyweight championship program. We've got a new challenger at 155 in what is actually a pretty stacked 155-pound division. We got two potential number one contenders, one of which ended up getting the nod last night, although had he not, Josh Thompson was waiting in the wings. Dana White admitted that if the Gray Maynard fight was not exciting, then he was going to give the championship match against Ben Henderson to Josh Thompson. We're going to talk about that booking. Plus, last week's WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Haven't had a chance to talk about that here on the program yet. Extreme Rules took place. A lot of interesting finishes, a lot of things leading into Raw this past Monday night and tomorrow. Also, of course, talk about SmackDown and the TNA Impact television show. Impact is moving an hour later this coming Thursday back to the old time slot of 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 9 o'clock p.m. Pacific. And interestingly enough, the week before they decided to make that move back, they ended up bumping their rating back up to 1.3 million viewers. Something like this would only happen to TNA Impact. We're going to talk about that. Plus, the WrestleMania buy raid, the death of Mick McManus, one of the biggest stars in the history of UK pro wrestling. We'll talk about the UFC Hall of Fame, two new members, one of which knows, one of which, well, I'm sure he knows, but they didn't bother to tell him before they made the announcement he was going in. We got so much stuff to talk about today. Heading to the first break. When we come back, more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That is the TuneIn Radio app. Just search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer Live. You can hear us anytime you want on that app, plus archives of the show and a lot more. We're joined here, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike is recovering from, I've been told, injury that he suffered last night as a result of being old. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes. Not only was it because I was old, it's funny, and you get those injuries, you get a pulled liver, it's the damnedest thing, and the pulled liver always brings on a somewhat of a headache as well, and probably should learn to take it a little bit more easy on these holiday weekends.
Lifting too many glasses.
I was working out. I was working out hard. You know, it's amazing. A lot of people they like showing off and they like pushing up huge amounts of weight, and they think that looks impressive. I just curling 12 ounces a whole lot of times. To me, that I'm looking for more getting toned that way.
Low weight, high reps.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't want to mention anybody's name here. This has nothing to do with anything. Except I thought it was so funny. I got a buddy who's really into health, and he'll only eat grass-fed beef and lots of fruits and vegetables. Don't eat any processed foods, he says. And he likes to try to help everybody else get into shape. Exercise programs, he does CrossFit. But for some reason, and it's baffling because he's actually a very intelligent guy, he is convinced that you can drink all the beer you want and you won't get fat. And maybe someone listening right now can explain this fact to me, how you can drink all the beer you want and not get fat. But I was thrown off my rocking horse when I heard that one.
Well, I guess if you're always lifting, you're always working out, and you're a healthy person, you can kind of do that. I mean, beer is just completely empty calories, and I guess if you're always burning that off, that's not as bad as, you know, loading up at McDonald's or something like that. And plus, a little of the alcohol in the system, getting your blood moving, and the effects that you can actually get from drinking wine and beer. I mean, it's possible, although...
Wait a second. Your blood moving?
Well, you know, hey, look.
My blood is at a standstill until I start drinking?
Well, no, but I mean, remember, look, hey, look, as a pro wrestler, you know, when you wanted the great blade job, you took a bunch of aspirin, and a lot of guys would take shots because it thinned out your blood. And a lot of people point to drinking red wine, like in France. I mean, they have, you know, big butter or big rich diets, yet they seem to live for quite a long time. And one of the things that they give credit to is the antioxidants that they're naturally occurring in the wine.
Actually, I think the reason that the people in France live longer, or they're healthier, is that, yes, they may eat butter and they may eat fat, but they don't eat a lot of it. I have a buddy who is a Frenchman. Everybody knows the Frenchman, Celian, who...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Celian is, I wouldn't say he's fat. He's not
terrible
thin.
Sense of fashion.
He's not thin, but he's not fat. But Celian is convinced that he's the fattest man in all of France. And the point is, if he came to America, he'd be one of the leaner people around. Because in France, they don't eat a ton of food like we do here. We just eat and eat and eat. And then we keep eating. And then we drink a lot of beer. Not good for
everybody.
And
I think to bring this thing all the way around, the reason he says you can be healthy drinking a lot of beer is because he likes to drink a lot of beer.
Well, of course, that is a fact. And speaking of beer drinkers, I can't think of any tie-in to UFC 160 last night.
Oh,
actually,
I have a perfect one. Somebody, please buy Mark Hunt a beer and then drink it for him, because I don't think he can open his mouth after that.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Mark Hunt, he was finished last night by Junior Dos Santos in the fight of the night. He's got $50,000. That's a lot of beer. That's a lot of beer. He did not, the hunt for the gold didn't pan out for him. But Junior Dos Santos was able to finish him with a spinning high kick and punches and such on the ground. And in the other main event, Cain Velasquez destroyed Bigfoot Silva even quicker than he did the first time. And that sets up Velasquez Dos Santos 3 coming up this, I guess later this winter is what they're looking at. And I guess the big question, Mike, is would I watch the show? It's very impressive for Junior Dos Santos to knock out Mark Hunt. But at the same time, I'm not sure that at the end of the night, after seeing both men's performances, I'm not sure I'm convinced that Junior Dos Santos is going to beat Cain Velasquez coming up in their third match of their trilogy later on this year. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, either am I. And I love Mark Hunt. I've watched K1 and Pride. I was one of those guys. So, you know, when you to see Mark Hunt actually, you know, turn down taking a buyout of his contract and continuing on and actually submitting a guy and having some success in UFC, it's, you know, it actually, as you know, old men sticking together, it feels good. But with that said, hey, look, Mark Hunt can beat a lot of guys. He can. And the heavyweight division, much like in boxing, I mean, it's just one of those things when it comes to fighting. And kickboxing is the same way. I mean, Jerome LeBanner could walk out there right now at, you know, 43 years old or whatever it is, and still compete, because when you have a big punch and you have a hard head, you can last in the heavyweight division for a while. But there's such a big dividing line between actual contenders in the heavyweight division of all sports, but in this case the UFC, and everyone else, that, you know, Mark Hunt's number 9 rating and Mark Hunt's march to the gold, while it did feel good as a long-time...
Hunt!
You know,
his hunt for the gold!
Yes, as a longtime viewer of his, you know, it feels pretty good. But with that said, I mean, did anyone really think outside of a puncher's chance that he had a shot against Junior Dos Santos, let alone against a guy like Cain Velasquez? No, at least, I mean, there were very few. I'm sure there were some people out there, but for the most part, no. And again, he did what he had to do, though, Junior Dos Santos, because when you're put in a situation like that, you know, he did what he had to do. He went and got the knockout in the third round. He fought hard the whole time. He did take Hunt down once, which led to resounding boos from the crowd because they just wanted to see these two guys throw hard on each other, and they definitely did. It's just that Junior Dos Santos landed a whole hell of a lot more, and you got to give him credit. He did exactly what he had to do. Is it the greatest, shiniest victory, especially in hindsight as we look back on this years later? Probably not, no. It's not going to look as good. But with that said, we were getting – everything went right last night as far as getting the one heavyweight fight that we all kind of want to see and that the UFC wants to see. They were two one-sided fights when Cain and Junior fought each other before. They're tied one apiece, and – no matter which side you're on, at least we're going to have a third big heavyweight fight happen, whether it's, you know, on the UFC on FS show or however it's going to work out. It's this fight we wanted to see, so it all worked out that way.
The also on the card, we had Maynard and Grant, TJ Grant and Gray Maynard, with the winner perhaps getting a shot at Benson Henderson. Dana White admitted afterwards that if this fight would have sucked, if this fight would have been boring, he was going to give the title shot to Josh Thompson, who a lot of people, after they saw Josh Thompson's finish of Nate Diaz, thought that he should be the number one contender. So, fight wasn't boring. First round knockout by Grant. So it's going to be TJ Grant and Ben Henderson. And after Cowboy Cerrone beat KJ Nunes last night, KJ Nunes looked awful in the fight. Cowboy Cerrone beat him via decision. Looks like they're going to be going with Cowboy Cerrone against Josh Thompson, and the winner of that fight is going to get the winner of TJ Grant versus Ben Henderson. What do you think of this booking?
Hey, great booking. Actually, that's the thing that came out of the show last night, where there are lots of things set up really, really well. Cerrone and Thompson don't much care for each other from how it sounds anyway, so even though Thompson's probably disappointed that the fight ended up being good and, you know, he doesn't get the title shot, he's still going to have a high-profile match with Cerrone, who he's great. Cerrone's just a guy who's great for the UFC. I mean, he may not be, you know, the champion or anything like that, but he's a guy you can put out there. He's got charisma. You can put him on a headlining a FX type of show. You can put him definitely on the undercard and put him on free TV when you're on FX. He's great there or on Fox. And then he's great on pay-per-views, too, because people, you know, they know what they're going to get out of him, and a fight with him and Thompson's going to be great. And that loaded up 155-pound division. I mean, you have Pettis going down, but he can
hold
go
that
back
thought
up again. But we'll talk about this more after the break.
Just a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794 and 92, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Check us out on the TuneIn Radio app. On your smartphone, search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer Live. You can hear this show live every Sunday or check out the archives as well. Lots of great stuff on the TuneIn Radio app. We were Mike was in the middle of going on and on about, what were you going on about before I cut you off? The booking of the
155-pound division in the UFC.
That's right.
I read the ESPN book about those guys have all the fun, where they're talking about Jim Valvano, the old basketball coach for North Carolina State, Dick Vitale, the former basketball coach, who went into the booth and they had to like cut him off. Because, you know, he would just keep rambling on and rambling on, so they would basically just kind of like, you know, whoever he was working with would basically just kind of jab him with a pen and they cut his mic off. We need some sort of scenario like that for me, because I get so excited talking about half-naked people getting busy on a canvas mat, which they did last night. And 155-pound division for the UFC, again, you know, it is, TJ Grant looked great. He really did. That was really a surprise over Maynard. Grant, it made all the difference him coming down now. You know, he's 5-0 now as a lightweight. He's going to get this next shot against Henderson, and I think Henderson's going to win the fight, but it's still a, you know, exciting possibility, because it's the second, you know, big blow-away performance for him after he knocked out Matt Wyman. So he's got, you know, two good highlight reel, you know, fights rolling into there, so it's not going to be a hard sell that way. He got knockout of the night as well, too, in that fight, so he gets the $50,000, which Dana made sure to point out afterwards, is because he was going to give it to Junior Dos Santos, But Mike Tyson overruled him and said, "No, no, TJ Grant needs to have the that bonus." And Mike Tyson, I think, yeah, it was an interesting show last night with some of the promos that they had. Obviously, there's a new online gaming, poker gaming bill that was passed, so it's actually legal in Nevada. And there's obviously the tie-in with the Fertittas and Stations Casino, so there was that. There was a promo for Las Vegas itself, on top of Mike Tyson being a ubiquitous presence on the show. So, yeah, it was an interesting night last night.
Maybe what I'll do is I'll just let you keep ranting and I'll just turn your volume down and wrap up the segment.
That's, you know what, that's what they actually do to some other people. And yeah, you should probably do that to
them. That's right.
I apologize.
That's all right. Those things happen. That was the actually one other thing before we move on from UFC 160 here. That is the I felt that both myself and Max Holloway were screwed last night. I am doing a betting contest. Not real money, of course. We're just playing a game. This isn't Station Casinos here, but doing a little contest with Todd Martin. We're both getting X amount of imaginary dollars. I don't even know how much. Todd has not been keeping me updated as to how much money we each have of late. I think I was briefly ahead. But anyway, we're doing bets, and I bet heavily on the underdog, Max Holloway, and I believe he won this fight, but these damn judges gave him the decision, and as a result, they screwed me.
Well, welcome to the wonderful world of gambling. Imagine if you were spending real money on that. That's why people lose their mind, go nuts, and some people become big conspiratorial people.
Who do you think won the fight?
I don't know, because I didn't see that one. I just saw the main show.
That's right. I guess that might make it difficult for you to give an opinion.
Yes, but I'll say this before you tell me what happened. Glover Teixeira, and granted, you know, James Tahuna is not exactly a man of epic proportions, but two in a row here for Glover, who again looked really good too. And you know, there's again that 205-pound weight division is kind of shaky, but it is nice to see Glover, you know, be a new face in the mix, and at least, you know, fights with him and Gustafsson I'm actually looking forward to. I'm not sure anybody can beat John Jones, but the thought of Glover against a couple of the guys in there too is going to be interesting. And as hyped up last night, the UFC 161 show with Dan Henderson and Rashad Evans and a couple of the other guys on there, that should actually start setting up what the plans are going to be for that division as well.
So what happened in the fight, by the way, is that Max Holloway won, but they gave it to the other guy. Ridiculous.
The type of analysis you can hear nowhere else.
I don't know what else you want me to tell you. I thought he won the fight. I thought he won the fight, and the judges were watching another fight. That's what happened. Ridiculous.
Well, you know, the undercard of the show, they did show a couple of the fights on the main show itself, because there were so many quick finishes on the main event, and it seemed to be a pretty good show from top to bottom there.
All right, we've also got we got to talk about last week's WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view. We haven't had a chance to do that yet, but Extreme Rules, what did you think of the show?
I thought it was an okay show. I really I was with Larry Madison coming on talking about St. Louis, and he had a story, and I think it was Dick the Bruiser and somebody in St. Louis. They had a Texas death match, and there was somehow some sort of weird finish. I think they may have done a double knockout finish or something like that, because they thought they could pull it off and bring it back, and it ended up really hurting the stipulation. And obviously in today's WWE, that type of stuff, you know, to me it matters, and I think it shows in some ways it matters, but I guess overall as a whole, it really doesn't. But there were people that were not happy, and I wasn't happy either with the way they finished off John Cena and Ryback. It's funny, you know, because we talked about it before the show. They keep putting themselves in positions with Ryback where you can't beat them, but you don't want him to win. You don't think he can carry the load. And they kind of paint themselves in the corners, and it's like, well, we want to have Ryback and John Cena feud, and we'll just go ahead and figure it out as we go along. And I think that was kind of the same way. I mean, it didn't make much sense for Ryback, if he's the last one standing, and John Cena's the one going out on the stretcher, and Ryback was the one who did the offensive move on him, spearing him through the video wall on the entrance. It just didn't make much sense to me how that came off, and I don't think the live crowd liked it either. But as a whole, I didn't think the show was too bad at all. Can't complain about it. Randy Orton and Big Show, those were just two pros having a good match. There was no, you know, emotion behind it or anything like that for me, but that was good. Lesnar and Triple H was pretty good. It wasn't great or anything. But the Shield and Team Hell No, I thought was really good. And, again, the rest of it, Dean Ambrose and Kofi, I thought was good. And then the rest of it was just kind of there. So it wasn't an awful show by any means, but it wasn't I don't think one where if you said, do you want to spend $60 on that again, that I would suggest anyone do it.
Still annoyed at the finish of the Cena Ryback match. Don't build a last man standing match if you don't want to have a finish. You know, they could have done anything. They could have done, I don't know, a tables match. They could have just done a straight match. It doesn't matter. He had a lot of other matches on the show with stipulations. There's a lot of things you could have done, and you know, do a disqualification or something. But don't do a match where next time they do a last man standing match, I'm going to go, well, there just may not be a finish. Both men may be down for 10. So what's the point? I want a finish. I want a decisive finish in my matches if the match is being billed as a match that has a decisive finish in it. So
you're
that
paying
was
for it.
That was frustrating. So they're building up to an ambulance match, and I don't like as a fan to be thinking, well, how are they going to screw us out of this ambulance match right here? And then you wonder, is there going to be a finish in the ambulance match? Is this feud going to end? Is Ryback going to slip on a banana peel and fall into the ambulance? I mean, what's going to happen in this match right here? I presume, could be wrong, but I presume this feud is going to last through SummerSlam. Maybe they'll just have Ryback win. Although it kind of seems odd to do that after he destroyed John Cena in their first meeting, even though he didn't take the title. So again, as you noted, if you don't want to beat Ryback, but you don't want Ryback to win, then you screwed up a long time ago by even putting this feud together. You know, you could have given Ryback any babyface that he could have destroyed for three straight shows, and then you build him up to the match with John Cena. But you got to think about these things. I mean, think about what you're going to do for finishes before you think about what you're going to do for a storyline or a feud. And I'm sure, I mean, presumably they did, but what they came up with was not very good. This last man standing with no finish. They also, it's not the only match where they kind of killed a stipulation. They did in the I Quit match as well, where you've got this match where the only way to win is to say I quit. In fact, they did an I Quit match recently. I forget. Actually, it may have been. Actually, you know what? I think it was TNA where they did this. But so I guess you can give WWE the benefit of the doubt. But a dude tapped out in an I Quit match, and he was specifically told, "You can't tap out. You must say I quit." And so the guy then said, "I quit," and then the match was over. But to me, an I Quit match means you say I quit. So a dude can't throw in the towel. You can't do a towel finish in an I Quit match. You just have to say I quit. And I talked about this, and I had people writing in saying, oh, well, you know, there was, Bob Backlund, a towel finish. That wasn't an I Quit match. That's just a match. I don't care about throwing the towel for a normal match. But in an I Quit match, dude has to say, I quit. And they found a way to do a screwy finish with that, where the towel ended up in the hands of Zeb Coulter. And he threw it in and pretended like Alberto Del Rio's manager threw it in. So we had a finish there. And I thought, well, that's dumb. So at least they restarted it and we got an I Quit in the end. But still, that's another great way to sort of kill the stipulation there. And then Henry and Sheamus was the... at least they just did a normal strap match. Dude hits all four corners. But I expected more. I wanted a strength-based Mark Henry finish. And I didn't get it. So I was very upset about that. Any quick comments before we go to break? I'll just talk more about it when we come back.
No, just, you know, again, that I'll just say, because there's a lot that they're doing kind of iffy, but when you have themed pay-per-views, too, it leads to matches like the I Quit and stuff like that, where you're it's just weird booking going into it because you've already paid yourself into a corner.
Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794. XM Radio, Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app. You can search Sports Byline USA and hear all of the great programming, including this show, Wrestling Observer Live. And as noted, WrestlingObserver.com, place to go for all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, the number one pro wrestling mixed martial arts combined website in the world. Everything you ever wanted to know about either subject. We do radio shows every single day. Dave Meltzer and I were up live from Vegas last night doing the post-UFC show. Got it up there at about 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern. So we get those shows up after an event. And if you listen to it, you already got all of the breakdown and analysis of that show, plus all of the news in wrestling and mixed martial arts. If you sign up today, it's only $10.99 a month. And for your $10.99, you not only get all the brand new radio shows, you get the Wrestling Observer newsletter every single week, you get a back issue of the Observer every single week, you get Figure Four Weekly every single week, and in addition to all the new radio shows, every single show that we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives. That's thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio that is there for the taking if you sign up. So no extra fees, no extra cost. $10.99 gets you full access to everything we have ever done. And there's a lot of stuff up there. You could never, in a month, in a year, I don't think you could ever go through every single thing we've got up there on the website. So it's worth your $10.99. If you like this show, if you like Wrestling Observer Live, I guarantee you will love the Wrestling Observer website subscription area. So head up there and check it out for a month. If you don't like it, you can just bail and never come back. But if you give it a shot, I'm pretty confident that you'll be signing up long-term because there's a lot of great stuff up there all the time. And if you don't believe me, this show obviously is free. And if you go up to WrestlingObserver.com right now, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest free radio shows. Nothing to do but click. And when you click, you get to listen to the shows. And that's what you get every single day on the website. So check that out. We were talking Extreme Rules and the booking of the event. And, Mike, anything else before we wrap up that discussion?
Again, back to the theme pay-per-view thing. I understand why they exist. You know, the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, even though you may not have it should be like War Games where you have a bunch of hot feuds and a bunch of guys going for the title who are really into it, and it's the only way that they can figure it out. But when the whole part of your business is to sell toys and to sell posters and to sell names, I understand why you have theme pay-per-views, but this was a good situation of one where, much like Ryback and CM Punk at Hell in the Cell, where you basically have a tough time. You back yourself into a corner, and for a company that doesn't seem to have a whole lot of forward thinking, you know, anyway, when it comes to some of their booking, it just compounds the problem even more. And, you know, this Cena Ryback thing may end up, and again, it's not like it killed the pay-per-view or anything like that. It left a little bit of a bad taste in people's mouths, but it does, when these things happen, and it happens so often, it really does, where it's like, well, what did I pay for? And in an era where people can just wait one day, find out, you know, not even one day, you know, 10 minutes, find out instantly what the reaction was to the show, they can just wait and hold on to their 50 or 60 bucks and go, well, I'm not going to get this one. I mean, it's a concern. I mean, the WrestleMania number was great. The numbers for their other shows are not that great, and it's because of stuff like this where people are just tight with their money, and if they're not going to come off of it, if they don't think you're going to give them what they're paying for, and what you paid for was a last man standing match, and you get a screwy finish out of it, and that was, you know, again, poor thinking. We can see where they go from this. Obviously, it may last till SummerSlam, so there could be a plan there. I want to rail them for not having a plan, but I don't like, I just, that on Sunday and then the Kurt Axel Triple H thing on Monday, it's like, again, I understand from their point of view what they're thinking of making this a soap opera type of storyline. But that was, again, far worse than anything that happened on Sunday. that really, I thought, stunk because you have a guy that's going to need a hand anyway, and Michael McGillicuddy, Joe Hennig, who's now called Kurt Axel for those people who didn't see it, which pays homage to his father, Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, and to his grandfather, Larry the Axe Hennig. And he ends up becoming Paul Heyman's new guy who comes out. And obviously there was talk about RVD. People were wondering who it could be. Well, ends up being McGillicuddy, and that's good for him, except for he's not the greatest promo in the world. He's got a good look, but it's not like he stands out or there's like something special about him that makes him so completely different than anybody else. So he's a guy that's going to kind of need a hand. And the way they debuted him on Monday, I'm sitting there watching it, and Triple H comes out, and Heyman introduces him, and Triple H talks down to him, slaps him down, and it's like, okay, well, maybe they have a plan for this, and I'm not going to get upset or anything like that yet, but it did make him look foolish. But they're going to have a match later on in the show. This is a great time for Triple H to do, you know, something good and, you know, put Kurt Axel over strong. He's already banged up from the night before. You got a great story, you know, right there where, you know, Triple H could make a star and make an impact player, possibly out of Joe Hennig, or at least do his best to do it. They did not do that. And it's not because that they don't have a plan. The plan was Triple H was banged up from the night before. It's very dramatic. His head is hurting. You know, Hennig doesn't get in much offense, but Triple H is on top of him. He's too faded out. He can't do it. He falls out. The doctors run in and stop the match. Okay, that's a story. You're going to continue on with that story. It's very WWE, high drama-like. I understand that there's people that like that. But you had a perfect chance right here to go back to the pure sporting way and still have more of organic-feeling drama coming out of it with Triple H wrestles a young guy who maybe he should probably destroy, but he's banged up from the night before, and much like all athletes who go out and have huge performances the night before, sometimes they go in and they lose one that they should have won because they're all banged up or they're tired or they're distracted or whatever the deal is. And that young guy, you know, if you give him that big win, maybe he takes the ball and runs with it. You know, the sporting way of doing that, to me, would have been far better than what they did, because I don't think Triple H is getting the reaction, and has not been getting the reaction, is like a Cena-esque, or like he is something that, you know, someone that people truly want to invest in a feud with or want to invest in a storyline with. And maybe I'm wrong. I just don't get that feeling watching it. To me, it doesn't come across on screen at all, and it certainly doesn't to me, with what's been going on with him. And Hennig gets nothing. Kurt Axel gets nothing. He's not helped out by this at all. It doesn't make him look any better or anything like that. It was kind of flat. And he's a guy that, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to insult him or anything like that, he could use the hand, and he didn't get it. So why put him in that position? That guy who, for Paul Heyman's guy that week, could have been anybody. It could have been Heath Slater coming out for 1 week as Paul Heyman's guy to get destroyed. Why would you do that with someone you're re-debuting who could use all the help in the world? And again, I can't say that they don't have a plan, because they obviously have a plan for this. I just didn't think it was the right one. And again, I know they don't like sports and things like that, or they're up and down when it comes to the sporting part of sports entertainment. It just, to me, the sports one would have actually gotten more emotion and been far more interesting.
I would have been fine if maybe Kurt Axel. Actually, they're now calling him Curtis, because I think too many people have... you hear Kurt Axel, and all you think is Kurt Angle. So, Curtis Axel, I'd have been fine if he'd have, thrown an Enziguri. And after that, Triple H had got all woozy and was unable to continue. So, at least he gave the guy something. As it is, I here's my guess. My guess is that on Raw, they bring out the family. The family is there to convince Triple H you don't need to wrestle anymore. It's time to go home. It's time to be an executive. You've got a new job now. You got to quit doing this pro wrestling stuff. You had a match and the next day you nearly collapsed. So it's time to just hang up the tights. And from that point forward, Curtis Axel and Paul Heyman can go on TV. And their talking point will be, they're the guys that retired Triple H. And the heat would be that, obviously, it was not Curtis Axel that retired Triple H. It was Brock. But and then obviously next year some I mean maybe even next year it'll be Curtis Axel, but something will happen. Triple H will come back. He'll do his WrestleMania match, and that'll be that. But it would have been nice if they'd given Kurt something. You know, if you watch the show, I mean, they gave him nothing. He was in the ring with Triple H. What the hell does that mean? I know they like
after
to think
after already being smacked and talked down to, and like, I mean, it's fine for them to do that thing with the family coming out and everything. But yeah, exactly. Why couldn't it be a big move? You know, or heaven forbid, Triple H is banged up. He's selling it. It's not like the man can't act. You know, he could pull off being weakened and woozied and all that stuff. And I know people would say, well, you're sandbagging him. No, not at all. Have him do it that way. Have, you know, Henning get the win. I'm sorry, Curtis Axel get the win with, like, the perfect plex or something like that, which is a move he can do and has done in developmental before he was called up to the main roster the first time, but they didn't have him do it. Have him do that. And even you can use the excuse that, yeah, Triple H can say, hey, I was in a weakened state after Brock Lesnar. That's why I lost that match to that dumb kid I didn't, you know, I should have never lost to. And you get the family on the other side saying, no, Hunter, it's you would have killed him 5 years ago. It's because you can't do this anymore. Doesn't that seem, I mean, it happens in sports all the time. It happens in boxing all the time. You guys were talking last night on the show about Phil Baroni. I mean, these, you know, people have to work for different reasons or think they have to do things for different reasons. It, to me, it was just the sports option was right there, and I think would have worked out a zillion times better than what they did.
Also on Raw on Monday night, they did a lot of different things on Raw, but they set up the ambulance match with John Cena and Ryback. They have they did a lot of stuff with Fandango, Wade Barrett, Jericho, and Miz. Which, I don't know if Jericho will end up being added, but certainly it looks like they're going with Fandango, Barrett, and Miz in a three-way for the Intercontinental title that was set up on SmackDown. And they're continuing the feud with The Shield and Team Hell No and Kofi, which actually led to an awesome match, really good match on SmackDown, if you checked out that show. That was some good stuff. But overall, the main theme of Raw ended up being the Heyman McGillicuddy Triple H angle, and I guess we'll see what they end up doing tomorrow. It is funny that we're here in 2013, and Triple H supposedly nearly dies on Raw, or whatever the gimmick was, and we have to wait until tomorrow to find out what happened to him. It is not serious enough for them to give much of an update up on WWE.com, which you would think, man, it's Triple H. Maybe they should have something on WWE.com immediately.
And real quick, I'll shoehorn this in here, too. It's amazing they do that, but John Cena, the night before, after he gets carried off in a neck brace, and you think he was killed going through the wall, is shown on the post-show afterwards, getting off the ambulance, ripping off the neck brace, and going away.
That's right. That's
and
right.
They hype that up.
He's fine, everyone. He'll be back tomorrow. He will be back tomorrow, after all of the terrible things that happened to him at Extreme Rules. I wasn't amazed, because I'd kind of been told he was only going to be out a week, but there was still that part of me that was like, really, he wasn't on Raw? How about that? But he was on Raw, actually. After the show went off the air, he was in the dark match. So, yeah. All right, we're going to head to a break. I was up on WWE.com trying to find something on Triple H, seeing if they had any sort of storyline deal, but of course they don't. But I did find the WWE 10 Greatest Championship Belts Photo Gallery. And we're going to talk about that a little bit after we come back from the break and later on throughout the show. We got a lot of other news as well, so stay tuned, everybody. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, 92, 94, 794. XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, I got a gallery here on WWE.com. 10 Greatest Championship Belts in the history of the company. It says here that, what are wrestling's 10 most beautiful championship belts? WWEClassics.com asked belt expert and the creator of today's titles, Dave Milliken, which championships are the very best? And check out this photo gallery of his picks. He claimed he couldn't pick his favorite. But what do you think is the very first belt featured here in this gallery?
Oh, God. Unfortunately for
the
me...
The fact you have to even think about this is preposterous, Mike.
I know what it's going to be. I don't like it, but it's probably the winged eagle.
That's right. It's the winged eagle. Boo. What do you mean you don't like it?
I'm telling you, I still like that other belt Hogan used more. The one with the flags on it. For a short period of time.
I'm going to kick your ass
more.
Next year in New Orleans. You're going to get it for this. And I'm gonna hit you with the winged eagle.
That is such a that's a wuss belt. You know, if you're a fan of NWA at that time, look at Ric Flair. Look at the huge 10 pounds of gold. Not even 10 pounds of gold. The dome. The other belt that they use now for the world championship belt. That's a belt. The winged eagle just looked like a little toy.
A toy. My goal is to gain 80 pounds, build a time machine, go back and win the winged eagle before I die. That's my goal in life, everybody. I don't know how I'm going to achieve this. That's my goal.
Hey, if you do that, could you do me a favor? Can I go with you so I can win the Intercontinental title? Because I really like that belt.
Oh, you really like that one? Is that how it works? You don't have to go back in time, geek. You could win that same belt today. But the winged eagle is a part of history now.
Yeah, but I couldn't win it from Ricky Steamboat or Randy Savage.
Well, that's true. You couldn't, but you couldn't anyway, so what's the big deal?
That's a good point. But I could eat donuts with Don Morocco, who held a version of the Intercontinental belt that was ugly.
We're going to be back in just a moment, everybody. I got more. I'm going to go through this entire gallery here on this program. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi. Adam and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. So much stuff to talk about today. We spent the first hour talking UFC 160, the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Now we're talking about the greatest belt in the history of championships, the WWE Winged Eagle Championship, which I'm still trying to find a way to win here in 2013. Not sure exactly I'm going to do that yet. Maybe there's a grappling tournament somewhere that'll give away the Winged Eagle to the winner. I can train my ass off trying to win that. But I'm going to get it someday, Mike. I'm going to get that belt someday.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at this thing right now with everybody wearing it. I just don't get it, especially when it was on Hulk Hogan, too. Maybe he was just so massively huge. It looked a little bit weird. It looked a lot more natural on guys like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. But I see right after that, they have the Dome Globe 10 pounds of gold, which is the only belt I have ever bought a replica of. But the old Ric Flair Harley Race blackstrap version of that title is the only one I have sitting here right now, at least until I can get the old WCW World Television title made from back in the Georgia days. That had a bunch of flags on it, too, and maybe I just have this love for geography. That's what it is with the flags.
You're looking at the NWA wrestling title here?
Oh, yeah, the old Dome Globe one, yes. Love that one.
Let me take a look at this gallery here, everybody. This is up at WWE.com, by the way. You think the Winged Eagle looks like a trinket? Look at how small that NWA title is.
Oh, stop it. But that belt, look at that. That belt's got class and pizzazz.
I could put that belt in a fanny pack.
Okay, you want a bigger belt? Go over to the AWA one, the big dinner plate one.
I'm going to get to it. Don't you worry. There's Ric Flair holding up this title all over the place here. It's pretty impressive. This up at WWE.com, everybody. The 10 greatest championship belt photos. I guess this would be number 2, of course, behind the Winged Eagle, which is number 1. There's Kerry Von Erich with that title. What a trinket that thing is. Harley Race. We'll get to the Intercontinental title when we come back, everybody. That is also a classic belt. I'd go back in time and win that one. We're going to talk about that and the other 7 greatest belts in wrestling history after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, 92 at times. XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, you can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That is the TuneIn Radio app. You can always check us out there. All of the great Sports Byline programming, if you search for Sports Byline USA, as well as this show and archives as well. We, believe it or not, have been spending the last couple of segments talking about championship belts based on a WWE.com article on the 10 greatest championship belts of all time. And so far, we've talked the Winged Eagle, which is far and away number one, as agreed by both myself and Mike Sempervivi. There's also the NWA title. And here, the Intercontinental Heavyweight Wrestling Championship from the mid-90s, a classic title held by some of the best workers of the 90s. Some of the best workers of all time, in fact. Your Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, the father, of course, of Curtis Axel. And what do you think of that belt, Mike? That's a sweet belt.
Love that belt. And what makes that belt better is the fact, like you said, the guys that always wore the Intercontinental title, at, you know, your Kurt Hennings and Kerry Von Erich and guys like that, you know, there was always the whole thing for the longest time, that was the workers' belt. You had the big money draw on top. You had your Hogans and your Ultimate Warriors and guys like that. But the guys that go out there night after night and usually are the ones putting in the work when it was still the quote-unquote stepping stone title. That's what always made that belt even more attractive to me.
Intercontinental title. Look at that. There's the white strap version. In fact, if you remember back in the day, the Ultimate Warrior, he used to color code his belt with his gear. So if he wore baby blue trunks, for example, and God knows why the Ultimate Warrior was wearing baby blue trunks, but he did at times, he would have a belt with a baby blue strap. And as it turns out, they made multiple belts with different colored straps. You didn't just take the plates off and put a different strap on. They were a number of different belts, and he just picked and chose depending on what he was wearing. And there was the white strap version, the black strap version. Looks like a couple of different versions of the Intercontinental title. There's Ricky Steamboat with one where the WWF is painted red. And interesting trivia note that the current UFC championships, if you win a UFC title, they present you with a belt in the middle of the ring. And that is your trophy for winning the match. So unlike in WWE storyline where, let's say that Kofi Kingston here, for example, is the Intercontinental Champion, and somebody beats him for the title, he gives them his physical belt, and then they have the physical belt. So basically, you know, you win a revolving hot potato championship. But in UFC, if you win the title and then you defend it five times, then at your house you've got six belts because you get a brand new belt every single time. And because they have they now have so many weight divisions, you've got 125, 135, 45, 55, 70, 85, 205 in heavyweight, and so many fighters and so many championship matches, UFC, despite making millions and millions and millions of dollars every year, has taken to now presenting $400 replica belts to the champions. So you don't even get the real deal. You get a replica belt if you end up winning the world championship of your division. So there you go. Little trivia
that
note
is,
there.
That is kind of ridiculous, though, that they would give you a new belt every time. Now, I could see you doing that because you can go and give them to charity and things like that and auction them off. You could actually do some really great stuff that way with them. But isn't it kind of superfluous if you, like, say you go, there's going to be somebody one day that becomes dominant and goes on like a 15 title match winning streak. I mean, I'm not sure what Anderson Silva's up to now, but I cannot imagine having like 10 of the belts around. Wouldn't one belt be enough? Or why not present them with a $400 replica, but then give them like one really expensive one studded with like, you know, actual gold and diamonds that they could put up on their mantelpiece later on?
Anderson Silva has, how many title defenses does he have?
Could it be nine? Is it up that high?
Most consecutive title defenses. He has 10 title defenses, which means he's got 11 belts at his house right now. 11.
What do you do?
What do you do? You just got a room for belts. If you defend that belt 11 times, you can afford to build a room just for your belts.
Well, there's a skit on Saturday Night Live where Susan Lucci, who never won a daytime Emmy for years and years and years, and it became like a running joke. She was nominated for 20 years, but never won one. So she goes on Saturday Night Live, and in the opening skit, you know, there's like a guy using an Emmy award as a hammer. There's a guy like, you know, like taking the wax out of his ears with the top of one, stuff like that. It's like, isn't that what you would do with that many belts? It's like, you know, you come over, there's a dinner party, and it's just like, hey, thanks for coming over tonight. Have a belt.
Basically, yes. It's exactly what you'd do. You serve Easter dinner on belts.
And they call wrestling fans belt marks, which there's actually a funny thing, too, because you always hear about, like, especially like a guy like the Ultimate Warrior, people like that, who hated carrying around the belts because they had to carry around the belt. It was a piece of extra luggage, something else they had to lug around and take through security, and something else they had to worry about when they didn't want to bother with it. But it's always amazing when you go and you see a wrestler's home, or they go and show footage of one, or you talk to someone who they've got a display case of all those belts.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of guys have that. I got one here. I got the Texarkana title right there, as well as the old YWF, Youth Wrestling Federation, titles, which, by the way, the Intercontinental title was designed to look somewhat like the old WWE Intercontinental title, but I was unable to recreate a winged eagle back in 1993. AWA World Heavyweight title here, Rick Martel. That is a big-ass belt. Looks very similar, actually, to the old WCW title.
Yeah, that's the belt, too, that a lot of people, when they went to that, incredibly huge. That's the one they always call the Thanksgiving turkey plate belt. The old catch with that one, too, is it was made in prison.
How about that? Here's the 86 version of the AWA heavyweight title. This one's a little more golden. That certainly didn't last all that long. There's Jerry Lawler wearing it with his cape and his body hair. What else do we have here? A lot of them with Jerry Lawler with the title. There's the AWA Southern heavyweight title. A little belt. Talk about a trinket. The big gold belt. Of course, worn by Ric Flair, as well as many others, including Dolph Ziggler today, a version of the big gold belt. There's Great Muta with the belt, Bill Goldberg with the belt, Sting with the belt, Ric Flair, obviously, Barry Windham. The big gold belt, there you go. A fine little championship. Not my favorite, but it's fine. The World Class. World Class Wrestling Association World Heavyweight Wrestling Championship. That's a fine belt. It's rather generic.
That's the one thing you notice, too, about belts from that region. There were only a couple of belt makers. Dave Milliken, obviously, being one of them. But you see it coming up, too, with the old NWA television title, which there was a version of that Hulk Hogan wore, which was the WWF Heavyweight Championship, which I believe was the belt they used right after the old circle one that Bob Backlund would carry around, and the Iron Sheik had won. But that World Class belt looks exactly like the old WCW tag team titles, and it's amazing how many of the designs looked exactly the same. There wasn't a whole lot of variation throughout the industry, even though the companies may have been different. The belts kind of all looked the same at times.
Yeah, there it is, the World Class Championship, which looks very much like, as you noted, those, was it the tag belts, the WCW tag belts?
That was just one of them. They used it for a lot, because a lot of promotions used a world title version of that. In fact, you know, I think WWF, too, in a way, that belt, if you added the flags around it and kind of changed the shape a little bit, that was pretty much looked like one of the old WWF world titles as well.
Yeah, the World Tag Team titles of the WWF, that was pretty, I liked the belt because it was during a period where I first started watching wrestling, but would I consider that one of the great belts of all time? Probably not.
That's kind of like an uglier belt, but it's one of those ones that's made a little bit more attractive because you have, you know, the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs, and there were, you know, teams that were loaded up, and it just, you know, it's kind of a good memories belt.
NWA television title with, I swear to God, an ABC and a CBS logo on it. Not making that up.
Oh, yeah.
Hold your thought there, Mike. We're gonna run to a break. I'll let you talk about the CBS and ABC logos here on the television title in a moment. Back in a second, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I can't believe we're talking about championship belts for 3 segments now, but I am looking at a replica. Actually, this is probably the originals. The NWA television championship. And these are old school. There's I noticed the ABC and CBS logo immediately because it says ABC and CBS. But in fact, it appears that there is an NBC logo because there's a peacock there in front of the letter N. And I'm only 37, so I don't even know if that logo even existed when I was a child. I don't remember this NBC logo at all. I presume that's the old NBC logo. But they've got NBC, ABC, and CBS, which would have been, at the time, the main networks. This was absolutely before the Fox network came on board. I actually remember that happening when I was younger. But in addition to NBC, ABC, and CBS, there's also a picture of a gigantic satellite dish, which looks like the same kind of satellite dish you'd see on the top of a mountain searching for extraterrestrial life. But that is on this belt as well.
Yeah, then the movie cameras or the film cameras, they're actually on the front plate of that belt. But yeah, that NBC logo actually, when we were kids, was the actual NBC logo there. It looks like two wood blocks, door jams with a peacock standing in front of it. And I always remember as a little kid, I understood having the networks on there because it was the television title, but I could never figure out why there was never a WTBS logo. And it's not like TBS had the greatest looking logo in the world or anything like that, but with Ted Turner's ego and the fact that, TBS was the focal point, I could never figure out why they didn't do that, and or because that satellite dish in a way looked like the old Georgia Championship Wrestling logo that they had, that they didn't kind of do something like, you know, and incorporate it that way. Just couldn't figure that one out.
Well, I think the satellite dish would be the WTBS logo, technically.
Yeah, but you know, with Ted Turner putting his name on everything, I'm surprised he didn't want to have that like kind of lodged in there as well.
So that was the last belt that was featured here in this gallery. And I guess I can understand why they didn't do it. But you know what was an awesome belt was the Brock Lesnar's IWGP title.
That is, yes. The one now is pretty killer in itself. I mean, that is a great-looking belt. But, yeah, the one Brock Lesnar had was fantastic. And I wish they would brought back, and because they have the split championships, they're not going to do it. But that unified belt that Brock Lesnar had won from The Rock when they decided to merge the belts together, that black and gold belt is still, to me, one of the best-looking belts of all time, hands down.
Google that one. WWE Unified Title. I've actually completely forgotten what it looked like.
I just thought that was a really, really sharp belt.
That was the one that that Brock won, in fact. I don't mind the new WWE title. It's going to take a while to really grow on me, but
At first it looked like a pinky ring to me, you know what I mean?
It's probably how it was designed. It's probably designed to be like a giant version of the WWE Hall of Fame ring.
Well, you know what, they do sell, they used to do that too. I'm not sure if they do anymore, but they probably do. They used to sell like rings and belt buckles that look like the faceplates of the belts.
I'm looking at the Hall of Fame ring. It actually does not look like the new WWE championship. It looks completely different, but pretty cool rings. Actually, they've got the Hall of Fame, the WWE logo in the middle, and on the side there's the WWE Hall of Fame kind of logo, and on the other side it has the year in which a person was inducted. So there you go about that. You can see a lot of pictures of people showing off their rings up on, including Abdullah the Butcher, who I believe indicated that he sold his on eBay or gave it away.
So he and Billy Graham, yeah. It's you got to say this. It is nice to do something like that because it's not like those rings are cheap. I mean, you know, I think school rings were like, you know, $200 or something like that, and in college they're much, much more. So, you know, hey, it's good for those guys, and I don't blame any of those guys for wanting to sell them either. I mean, hey, sometimes you need the money more than you need a ring, so.
All right, let's move on to the news again. Impact TV this week. What did you think of the show?
I thought it was okay. I'm not really all that into the whole Aces and Eights thing, and I was, I do like the Aries Rude team, and them. Yeah, it looks like a four-way with Chavo and Hernandez and Bad Influence. I was interested in who was going to be, you know, Storm's partner, and Gunner, I was a little surprised by that, and I'm not sure where they're going to go with that. I didn't mind the guy at all, and he's been gone for a while, so it was kind of good him coming back, but I'm not going to say anything bad about it, but I was a little deflated from that. I don't know what I was expecting. I had no idea who it was going to be or anything like that, but it was just kind of like, okay. And the Aces and Eights thing, Bully Ray is fantastic. I mean, Bully Ray is just absolutely great, but AJ Styles, it seemed kind of predictable at the end there, and it's just, I'm not super into the story. The show itself, I mean, it flowed smooth. I can't say anything bad about it or anything like that. It's just that they're the big main feud that they have going on. Just, I'm not dug into, other than I love seeing Bubba Ray out there every week.
How about Velvet Sky?
Velvet Sky's acting with Mickie James?
Her match.
It was a match. It was, technically, you can call that a match, right? I mean, you're the professional.
Technically, I wouldn't call that a match. It was a match. Velvet was so ungodly bad in that match. I felt bad for Mickie. Here you are winning the championship on national television, and it's in that match. That's a match you can't show your kids. Your kids would be embarrassed for you. And I received a number of emails, actually, the next day from a lot of different people. I had people saying that, Mickie's absolutely, she's very, very bad. And you know, I had other people saying that, yeah, she's bad, but you know what? There's a lot worse, which I'd have to see to believe at this point. I'm sure on the indie scene,
right there, by the way.
I'm sure on the indie scene, there are girls worse than Velvet Sky, but I'd have to see it to believe it because she's so bad. And I hate to harp on her on every single show, but you know, tough love here. Let's improve at wrestling.
Here's the thing with her, she doesn't need to be the Divas or whatever it is, the Knockout Champion. She just doesn't. You know, she needs to be there. I mean, she obviously is somebody everybody likes and likes seeing on the screen and all that stuff. But you don't need to have her with the Knockout Championship. You just don't. So I mean, she's been doing this now for a long, long time. And again, nothing bad with her. Obviously, she just hasn't been able to pick it up for whatever reason it is. That's fine. She can be utilized to do a lot of other things on there.
Like what?
I mean, even as a, you know, whether it be a personality doing something, or, you know, tied into a feud with somebody else, or tied up with another person. I mean, that's fine. Even the occasional match every once in a while, that's fine too. But, you know, if you're going to have a belt, I mean, it just, and you have people there like Tara and Gail Kim, and again, Taryn Terrell and Velvet Sky, it just, find different roles for them than being, you know, quote unquote championship contenders. Again, anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe a ring card girl.
For Taryn, oh, come on, you gotta get more than that for Velvet. I mean, she can be at least be someone's valet or a manager or involved in some sort of story that way.
Yeah, I guess. A valet, eventually she'd have to take bumps, and the taking the bumps is what worries me, because she takes them all wrong. She lands on her ass and her tailbone, and you're
more worried about her than Alicia Fox, who, I swear to God, she's made of whatever Gumby was made out of. That's what she does, because she will take... She does the most simple thing, and I actually shiver when I watch her wrestle, and like she falls from the ring, and it's just everything she does is so unnatural, and it just scares the hell out of me. And I like her as a personality, but she's another one. Just don't wrestle.
I worry a lot more about Velvet than Alicia Fox, believe it or not. Alicia Fox at least will take like a big bump, but at least it's flat on her back, and Velvet falls funny every time, and it's like your hips and your tailbone and your back and your neck. I mean, you're just gonna fall apart fast, and you wouldn't have to if you learned just how to fall correctly, for example, or whatever. I don't know. I'm gonna move on from this subject, but everybody go to wrestling school and then keep training afterwards. You don't stop training after you get a booking. You got to keep training, especially if you're no good. Sting and Bully Ray, Todd's odds here, Mike. Do you believe that Brooke Hogan is going to turn heel and join the Aces and Eights?
Yeah, actually, I do.
Really? Am I the only one that thinks it's too obvious?
I mean, it's I mean, this is a 50-50 chance. Either way, it's, again, not going to be something I'm truly interested in. But, you know, Bully Ray showing some weakness, I think that's the direction they'll go of, like, you know, what's up with your girl? And, hey, I'll talk about my personal business. And maybe Devon tries to tweak and get something back and, you know, D'Lo and try to get some of his man back by pointing at Bubba Ray. And he and Brooke could talk more each week leading into the pay-per-view. And I think that direction would be the one that they go with. And, again, not that I want to see Brooke out there in a leather vest hanging out with all of them, but that's the direction I think they'll go. Maybe I'm wrong, but who knows?
Well, we'll see. I think that, I mean, I don't know. It depends on where they're going. I mean, if they're really going to do Hogan Bully Ray, it can't be for the title. So Sting has to win the title. And I don't know how Brooke turning heel would play into that. If they're actually going to go with, I don't know, Sting and AJ, for example, or Bully and AJ. I mean, if
that's what I think.
If it's Bully and AJ, then Brooke can screw Sting. But then I guess you're never going to get the Hogan match, which maybe they're not going to have Hulk Hogan wrestle. I mean, they keep saying this is not the plan. The plan is not for Hogan to wrestle. But if you watch the show, sure as hell looks like the plan is for Hogan to wrestle. But I don't know. We'll talk more about this after the break and a lot more news. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. So much stuff to talk about here today. We've been talking TNA, WWE, Impact, UFC 160, so much stuff. We're here every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio. Get ready, everybody. Channel 94, Channel 794, Channel 92, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Always available on the TuneIn Radio app if you search Wrestling Observer Live or Sports Byline USA. And, of course, WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go. All the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts daily radio shows. If you like this show and you only get to hear it one time per week, you are missing out. We do radio shows every single day. 4 o'clock in the morning last night, we had a Wrestling Observer Live with myself and Dave Meltzer talking the UFC 160 pay-per-view and all of the news. We do shows every day, and we got more coming up this week. If you sign up today for $10.99, not only to get all the brand new shows that we do, but every single show we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives. You will be provided every single week for $10.99 a month. You will be provided every single week with about 15 radio shows. And they're all about an hour long, sometimes more, sometimes a little bit less. And you can listen to them on the way to work, while you're training, in traffic, wherever you listen to your audio. You'll always have it available. And if you run out in a given week, let's say that you have 18 hours to listen to audio, and we only provide 15 hours that week. Well, jump into the archives, and we have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio available in the archives. So if you want a free sample, go to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest free radio shows. All you have to do is click the link. You can stream it on your computer or download it. You can podcast the shows, including the members-only shows, to your listening device, your iPhone, whatever. And it's all available to you, so check it out, $10.99. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But try a month. Just try it out. Take a look at everything we got, including the weekly newsletters, and I'm pretty sure if you like this show, you will be signing up for a long-term subscription. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, any final thoughts on Impact before we move on?
No, not really, other than I think it is going to lead to Bully Ray and AJ down the line. And I just, I'm trying to figure out Hulk Hogan. Obviously, they've built it up where you basically want to see Hulk Hogan and Bully Ray. I mean, that's one of the problems that you had with that whole thing was people. That's the thing that people want to see, and you know, Hulk Hogan just guys like he and Chono, and there's a lot of other ones. I just, you know, you think they're going to take a step one day and just completely turn to dust, and for all the problems that he's had, you know, they could do a lot with a little bit. I mean, as long as they use the blade, if you had those two just upright. But how do you draw any sympathy on Hogan then, on the old man, if he's not down on the ground getting beaten on by Bully Ray with some sort of, you know, it could be done. You could pull it off, and you could have lots of plunder, and it could just be a fight of a guy who, you know, is fighting for his daughter back is what it would be at that point. But it just, again, the thought of Hogan wrestling is just ludicrous with the condition that he is always reportedly in and how many surgeries he's had.
How many has he had, or just is this just a...
No, it's just kind of like you're throwing out there with how many that he's had,
including,
you know, it's ridiculous.
He's had a lot. It seems every time he gets in the ring, he ends up with a surgery.
Let me ask you a question, because he always said he should have used the Axe Bomber forearm elbow lariat smash that he used in Japan over and should have developed another move over than using the leg drop all the time, because obviously that's what screwed him up. And there's guys like Ric Flair who, no matter how they take bumps or how many they've taken, they're Mae Young. They're just going to somehow be able to last forever. But Fandango, it always killed me how, like, Bobby Eaton, a lot of guys, Scott Christopher, they'd use that top rope leg drop and you know, shifting the weight. Fandango uses it now. It comes from a long, you know, a far distance, and he's a big guy. With obviously the injuries that people have suffered later on in life and hips and all that sort of stuff, is that a move that you would suggest him keep doing?
Hell no. No. We've actually, this has been discussed many times, actually, and I get people get upset with me when I try to dissuade people from doing the top rope leg drop, because they're like, oh, you're trying to make wrestling unsafe, or you're trying to make wrestling lame by taking away these moves, and everyone's going to end up crippled anyway, so you may as well have them do these fancy moves. And it's like, first off, not everybody's going to end up injured, okay? Some people are. Everybody's body is different. All right. If you're like Ric Flair, for example, Ric Flair he's just fine physically. He doesn't have a cane. He doesn't seem to have any physical issues. And this is a guy that took high backdrops and backdrops outside on the floor all the time. And he's fine, because some guys are really durable. Aside from his Chris Jericho injured he screwed up a disc on Dancing with the Stars. But in pro wrestling, doing all the stuff he's doing, the lion salts and everything, never got hurt. Never got hurt. He's an extremely durable guy. But there are other guys that, Hulk Hogan, not durable. He was way too big, and he did a move, a leg drop, that put way too much stress on his hips and lower back, and he's paying for it today. And Harley Race, you know, he did that diving headbutt I don't know how many times, and screwed up his neck, as did Chris Benoit. But Daniel Bryan is doing the diving headbutt, and I don't think he's actually hitting anyone with his head, so his neck's probably going to end up fine. You know, there are some guys that are more durable than other guys. It's just everybody is different. And the key with Fandango is, yes, it is possible that he is a durable guy, and he can do that top rope leg drop for 20 years and never have a problem. But Fandango's been wrestling for about a decade, and when he was, prior to coming to WWE, he was doing that leg drop on the indie scene, and he was starting to have hip problems. So, he is now older, he has now been doing this longer. If you're a guy that has had hip problems doing this move in the past, then absolutely you should stop doing this. There are a million moves you can do. I can understand the idea when you're young of, let me come up with a spectacular move that will get me noticed, and then when I get a little older, I'll stop doing that move and find another finish. Maybe that's his idea. But I don't like to be told that everyone's going to end up hurt, so you may as well do moves that are going to hurt you, number one. And number two, that it's going to take away the excitement of wrestling if Fandango doesn't do a top rope leg drop, okay? I find it hard to believe that if you take that move out of his repertoire, all of a sudden Fandango is any more or less exciting than he was before. To me, he's a guy right now. He's not bad, but he's not great. And I don't think the flying leg drop adds or subtracts anything from his act. Just like Shawn Michaels. I mean, yeah, if you took the flying elbow out of Shawn Michaels' repertoire, that's one less thing for the people to get really excited about. But I will promise you that if Shawn Michaels came back and he took the flying elbow only out of his repertoire and he did all of the other stuff that he does, I would bet you that Shawn Michaels could probably still have the best and most exciting match on any WWE show. And to me, that's the art of wrestling. It is your job to be as exciting as possible without killing yourself. And you have to know your own limits, and you have to protect your own body and the other guy's body. And that's it. And the leg drop, the top rope leg drop, is not something that Fandango should be doing.
Well, especially you got Fandango's size, and with his athletic ability and with his size, he can have a move that, again, it's not like he's a little dude that has to hit a move out of nowhere or something like that. I mean, he's a big enough guy to come up with a more impactful move. Or, again, you said it doesn't take away from the character. You know, he lands wrong one night, then he can't, you know, sashay out there and dance. Well, it actually does take away from the character. And why not have a move that's, you know, even a scissors kick, something that's related to the dancing aspect of the character, you know, instead of just having it as a way to start a feud or something like that. You know, it's not, you know, Ricky Starr doing ballerina steps in the ring or something like that. You know, have him do something like that and then hit someone with a kick or some sort of move, hitting him, kicks him low, which sets up another move or something like that. Yeah, it just seems to be, again, I don't know what it is. It's always gotten me with that move, and to see him using it now, it's like, oh, God, it just makes me cringe.
And also, just an example, I watched SmackDown Friday night, and they had a match with, it was Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton and Sheamus against The Shield. Really good match, by the way. And there was a spot near the finish where everybody was hitting a move. Sheamus went for the white noise. Roman Reigns speared him and rolled outside. Orton hit him with an RKO on the outside. And in the ring was Kofi Kingston and Dean Ambrose. And Kofi just sprung up to the top rope and did a big high cross, and the place went nuts. I mean, I don't want to, this is going to sound so stupid, everybody, but just bear with me for a second. You remember in World Class when, like, Kevin Von Erich would do a high cross and all the girls would squeal? Okay, it wasn't quite like that, but there were girls squealing, and everybody cheered when Kofi Kingston did this high cross and hit Dean Ambrose. It was the best near fall on SmackDown in I don't even know how long. And Dean Ambrose kicked out, and everybody went nuts. But the point of this is, it's a very spectacular move, this high cross off the top. But guess what? Dean Ambrose caught the guy. They both ended up on the ground. Nobody got hurt. And it was an awesome, spectacular, high-flying move. That's what you should look for, to me. Look for a move that is spectacular and high-flying, where you get caught, both guys go down easy, and nobody gets hurt. That's the best thing you can do, to me.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing with that is, too, you know, you can do more with less when you get people emotionally hooked and invested. And you talked about the match on SmackDown, the match on Raw as well. You know, you can say a lot of things about Raw and being 3 hours and how painful it is, but the way it's looking, if you're going to have a Shield six-man in there, odds are it's not going to be a, you know, a completely lost show. You're always going to have that, because the match on Monday night, that was great.
The Impact show, going back very quickly, it's moving an hour later on Friday. Of course, right the week after, they get back to 1.3 million viewers. And I realize that, you know, the NBA competition is going to return, football competition is going to return, and they're not going to be able to stay at 1.3. It's going to fall again. But still, it still feels to me like this was a move that was a panicked move, not well thought out, and now leading to issues with Bellator. They're going to have to switch dates. They're probably going to be going head-to-head with UFC on Wednesday night, out of the normal time slot, no longer following Impact. I just think the whole thing is a bad idea.
Yeah, it really is. It just it is amazing the number that the basketball takes, both college and pro, the toll it takes on Impact. And I don't, it does, the move doesn't benefit me. Most of the time, I end up watching TNA on DVR anyway. But it's, you know, having it the hour later, I don't think is good. And again, I haven't had a chance to look into it or anything like that. So maybe you can tell me, as far as, has Bellator had to move, you know, buildings and that sort of stuff that they already had booked?
I don't think they've actually moved anything yet. But I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I haven't heard anything about moving locations yet. But obviously, they're kind of on hiatus until the, oh, by the way, I just got an email literally seconds ago that Hulk Hogan is back in the hospital. He didn't need a surgery. It was not a wrestling injury, but apparently he a radiator exploded on him, his Ooh. Left hand all messed up, grotesque swollen fingers, and he's now at the Tampa General Hospital in ER. Let's go to his Twitter here very quickly. I'm not sure I really want to... Don't go to Hulk Hogan's Twitter, everybody.
Should have went to Briscoe Brothers. It's worth the drive, brother.
Oh, God. We're going to be back in a moment, everybody. My eyes will never be the same. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the break, we're talking about Hulk Hogan. Apparently, he had a radiator explosion, which screwed up his left hand. Grotesque swollen fingers. He's in the ER right now. Hopefully, he ends up all right. Apparently, he can still tweet. He's got a picture up if you really want to see it. I don't mean to laugh, but it is kind of... it's kind of funny following his Twitter. I mean, his fingers are like absolutely disgusting. I mean, this is beyond disgusting. I feel very bad for the guy. But his Twitter, his Twitter feed reads, and I quote, he's got four tweets in a row. First one is, just had a radiator explode on my hand. Ouch! Second tweet, double ouch with a Twitter. Third pick, triple ouch with another pick. And then finally, I am at the ER now at the Tampa General Hospital. I can't even believe I'm looking at these pictures. Don't look at these, everybody. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Maybe he can get the movie career started again. They can make another remake of Inspector Gadget where he could play, you know, get the voice down really low and gravelly and be the evil Dr. Claw.
Poor Hulk Hogan. Did you look at these pictures?
No, and I don't want to.
Oh God, don't do it, dude. Don't do it. Ooh. Everybody, don't look at these pictures. It's the worst. But best wishes to Hulk Hogan.
There's another reason that match could be off then.
Could be. This poor guy. One physical ailment after another. It sucks. All right, everybody.
Should have tweeted anything about it. Failed as a worker there. Could have put that into the whole storyline.
It could have. Maybe they will. Maybe Ace and Nate's attacks his hand or something like that. I don't know. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Of course, tomorrow is Raw, everybody. And in the meantime, we got a lot of stuff up on WrestlingObserver.com right now, including a brand new Wrestling Observer Radio with myself and Dave Meltzer. You can head up there and check that out. We've got After Dark Radio from Friday night. Very interesting show. Would you go to Mars and never come back? All of the listeners call in with their thoughts on that. And a number of other topics as well, a number of other shows, a lot of newsletters, so check it all out. Thanks, Mike, as always. And, of course, thanks everybody at the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Everybody listening, we'll be back next week with a brand-new two-hour show. So thanks again. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.